Welcome to this edition of Buy Hold Sell, brought to you by Livewire Markets, Australia's number one website for expert investment analysis. Buy Hold Sell is a weekly show where two fund managers share their views on a selection of listed companies in their area of expertise. Buyers and sellers are what make the market, and you'll find that our guests don't always agree on the stocks being covered. Hit the subscribe button on your podcast player to be the first to receive new episodes each week. If there are stocks you'd like our guests to discuss, let us know by leaving a comment in the review segment. Remember, the views expressed in this show are not recommendations to invest. You should seek appropriate investment advice before making any investment decisions. And of course, please read the disclaimer in the show's notes. Let's get into the show.
Welcome to Buy Hold Sell, brought to you by Livewire Markets. I'm Jessica Amir from Bell Direct, and today we're here to help you find income amid the noise and despite the uncertainty. With me today is Don Hampson from Plato Investment Management and Chris Hall from Elliston Capital. So depending on who you look at and what analyst report you read, earnings per share is tipped to fall this year in the order of 10%. So how are you gents positioning your portfolios despite this uncertainty to continue to get income? Let's start with you, Chris.
Well, Jess, if earnings were to fall by 10%, that'd be a pretty good result. I think it's going to be much more than that, more like 30%, I'd say, is the real outcome. And dividends are going to go with it, potentially more so, given the amount of capital raisings we're seeing in the market. And I don't think we're done yet. So I think we've had about $20 billion of capital raised so far, or maybe a tad over that. But as I said, I don't think we're through that yet. So the key to navigating, from my standpoint, income has been as much about what you've been able to avoid as what you've owned during these difficult times. If I look at, you know, how we've been looking at the portfolio, we've really been avoiding for some time now the banks, which have seen very, very significant dividend cuts, obviously. And also the energy space, we've been very underexposed there, and they've seen obviously very, very significant cuts on the back of a very, very soft oil price. It's starting to rebound a bit now, but it's still a long way off where it's historically been trading. And we've been more positioned in the defensive names and sectors of kind of telcos, which have been very, very resilient, in some of the consumer staple names. So that's how we've been trying to navigate our way through this, to try not so much to grow income during this, you know, this 12-month period, because it's going to be very, very difficult to do that. But it's more about preservation of income as best as possible.
Just before we go on to Don, any key standout stocks?
So I think, again, to avoid, as I mentioned, we've been kind of very, very underweight the banks, the retail banks. And I think, you know, the challenge there is that, you know, A, we're about to face one of the most brutal credit cycles we've had since the 1991 recession. B, the capital requirements that the banks have to adhere to are becoming more and more stringent. And as we go through that credit cycle, you know, that level of capital is going to deteriorate. And C, even before we were going into the COVID crisis, the return equity profile of banks was diminishing anyway, just through business disruption. So, I mean, yes, we'll get some snack back, but I'm very fearful that, you know, the dividends and the yields that investors have been experiencing wanting from banks in the past just won't be there anywhere near the same level in the future.
Banks really aren't cutting the mustard like they were many years ago. But Don, how are you positioning portfolios amid the uncertainty?
Well, again, you've got to avoid the sectors that are cutting dividends significantly, and clearly a lot of the consumer discretionary stocks are getting hit there, travel, tourism related stuff. Yeah, the banks are underweight the banks, but similarly, we actually are back overweight Telstra. We've been underweight for a couple of years, but it now looks relatively solid. Some of the consumer staples are good as well. But we actually find some really good value and some good dividend opportunities in some of the resources area, particularly iron ore miners and gold miners. Less the sort of diversified guys, but certainly stocks like Fortescue to us is a standout.
Now, Chris, you mentioned that you're overweight to the defensives, and that's what we've seen outperform. So we've seen defensives and tech names outperform, and the energy sector has been lackluster in terms of performance, along with the REITs and the banks. So what have you guys been buying of late? If so, what is it and why? Back to you, Chris.
Yeah, so I mean, we're kind of adopting more of a barbell approach in the portfolio. So I'd sum it up, I've been kind of defensive growth as half position. So we're not uber defensive. We've got some defensive characteristics in the portfolio, but we've also got some growth characteristics. And it's interesting where you find income growth these days. And Don and I were speaking about that earlier on, is, you know, the materials, some of the bulks have become really the new banks, because the free cash flow generation is just so powerful. The balance sheets are in pristine condition. The industry structure is incredibly favourable for the bulk miners. You know, given, you know, how fortuitous, you know, we've got this fantastic resource base in Australia. And I think they're being, you know, underestimated for perhaps the longevity of the dividend stream here. We've both been in the market for a long time, and historically the biggest threat with resource companies is, you know, as soon as we get a cycle, they end up buying assets right at the top of the market and end up destroying a lot of shareholder value. But I do believe this time round that there will be some real focus, or continued focus, on capital management from all of the big players, BHP, Rio and Fortescue. And that volatility of dividend stream that we've had historically, I think, is not going to be nearly as high as it's been. So that makes them very attractive to me as an investor.
So what have you been buying per se?
Yep. So if I look at some of the names there, so added some Rio, already had a position there. Started to look at some of the consumer cyclical names, which got really beaten up, and that's and one of those names is Super Retail Group. That's recently, you know, have owned that historically, but again, the thematic for me there is, as we obviously begin to open up through COVID, I think we're moving into a meat and three veg world where people are going to move back towards doing more simple things in life, and that includes camping with the family rather than going off on overseas trips. I think there's going to be quite a prolonged psychological effect of people wanting to do that. So, you know, those businesses within that group are very much skewed towards leisure, and obviously the sports market, and kids are going back to school, so they'll be required to obviously start getting ready for, you know, for sport as well as adults. So there's a couple of key drivers there which look attractive to me. The stock's trading on about 11 times, so it's very, very cheap, and it's a decent dividend too. So that's one of the names, yeah, that look attractive to me. And perhaps one other I've added recently, as well as Ramsay Healthcare, I've owned that in the past, and that was through the placement they undertook a few weeks ago, at $56. And again, you know, it's about the premise of elective surgery coming back now after what's been a very, very quiet period over the last few months. And it's as much about their dominance in the market versus their competitors. You've got pretty much Healthscope, which is owned by private equity, and that's still struggling a bit. And then the non-for-profits are really battling. So I think there's a very strong structural story, and the return on capital trajectory from brownfield developments there, from hospitals, is pretty powerful. And I think given the state of balance sheets within the states, there's going to be a lot more what we call PPP work, or public-private partnership work going forward, because the states simply can't fund all of these on their own.
So structural shift favouring Ramsay, behavioural shifts, Super Retail.
Yep.
Don, what about you with what's going on, all these changes, big changes in markets as well? How are you positioning portfolios? Any big changes? If so, why?
Well, we've added to our gold holdings some of the little gold stocks and get some good dividend opportunities there. Our gold prices have held up very strongly, as they normally do in crises. And yeah, we've topped up some of the iron ore miners. I mean, we think Macquarie's a good bank, or group's a good stock. So we top some of it up when it, you know, in the depths of the market a month or two back, and you know, it got into the $70 mark. We thought that was pretty cheap. 50% sell-off seemed excessive for us.
So let's stay on banks. Many would argue, despite what Chris thinks, banks, I guess, form the bedrock of a great income portfolio. On the pretense of what they've done in the past. But there's a lot of capital raisings, NAB, $3.5 billion capital raise, Macquarie's coming out issuing hybrids to the market. What are you making of this? You've snapped up Macquarie. What other value are you seeing in banks for income?
Yeah, well, I think there's good value in banks long term. So I think that's the best positive for them. In the short term, there's going to be a bit of pain. Clearly, we've got a lot of significant unemployment levels. So I think there's going to be some more bad debts, no matter what the government's trying to do with JobKeeper and JobSeeker. So I think there's a period of pain, but longer term, I'm a bit more bullish on the banks. I think they will come back. I think probably the Royal Commission, which is now almost ancient history, that they're tidying up their act in areas where they probably, you know, probably should never have ventured in hindsight. And I think they might come out of this better and stronger. And the reality is, you look at ANZ, it didn't pay a dividend, but basically it highlighted that its capital levels are double what they were going into the GFC. So, I mean, there's no real risk that Australian banks aren't well capitalised. They're very well capitalised. You know, arguably, Commonwealth Bank's the best capitalised big bank in the world, and even and all big four banks are in the sort of top dozen or so of large banks globally. So they're very, very strong from a capital position. So I'm more bullish on the longer term, but the short-term dividend outlook, clearly uncertainty given what APRA has said to them.
There is, a little bit of red flags in the banks, but I agree. CBA said they're stronger than ever before. ANZ looking robust as well. Changing pace to those red flags in the market, aside from financials, which are, you know, scrapping or downgrading, you've also got other sectors, the downtrodden sectors, that stay on you, Don. What red flags are you seeing in other sectors and stocks?
Yeah, well, I mean, clearly the obvious ones are those that are most impacted by the lockdown. So, I mean, I think the last thing that will happen in the economy will be opening up our borders. So anything that's associated with international tourism and Qantas in that respect, although they'll probably benefit from a pretty weaker competitor. We're going to see what Virgin Mark II is, but you've got to think that it's going to be weaker than the original version, Virgin. But hopefully it might make some profits. We'll have to wait and see. So clearly, I think anything that's in the tourism-related areas is in real trouble, as we've seen. So I know that, you know, you've seen some very deeply discounted issues by the likes of Webjet and Flight Centre, but I think their outlook is very challenged for the next couple of years.
And what do you think, Chris?
Yeah, I'll agree with Don there. I think, you know, the tourism stocks are going to be the last to come out of this, and there's still a fair bit of pain to go through that. I think it's interesting too about the psychological effect of what this does to behaviour, consumer behaviour, you know, out of this. And I read an interesting statistic last week that around 63% of Australians were not here during the 1991 recession. And there was a really interesting paper put out by George Washington University looking at the behaviour of families, and that includes kids, you know, who are living at home, when they see their families go through real stress, real distress, financial distress, and what that means for their own behaviour going forward. So given we haven't had a recession in 28 years, you know, that really interests me as to what the behaviours are, you know, as we move through this. And I don't mean just in 1 year's time, but, you know, is this going to be a 2 or 3 year event? Because, you know, if I look back at the GFC, savings rates went from kind of 3 to 8 or 9% and stayed there for 6 years. Now, if this event's going to be worse than the GFC, we could easily have, you know, unemployment remaining at double digit for a prolonged period of time, and savings rates, because of confidence is so low, remaining, you know, elevated for a long period of time. So, you know, that has a real impact on obviously your consumer spending, and has a lot of impact on also, you know, potentially housing and some of the housing prices, and that all goes to confidence. So, for me, structurally, that's what I'm trying to get my mind around, how that world looks, not just in 1 year, but in 3 years' time. But, you know, in the near term, certainly leisure. I'm also thinking, obviously, some of the REITs are going to, which have historically been, you know, good yielders, good dividend drivers. I think there's some real structural shifts going on there, particularly in the, in the office market. You know, when you have the CEO of Morgan Stanley saying globally they're going to cut their office usage by 25%, you can kind of take that as a cue that that's going to be one of just many CEOs looking to do the same thing. And obviously the use of retail, I mean, clearly the online's exploded, but what's that social move back to normal shopping going to be like? Is it actually going to revert back to the norm, or is it going to be a different type? And I think that's going to be dependent on how quickly we find a vaccine and just the comfort of people being able to go out and socially, you know, mingle and feel comfortable in crowds, but that's something to be very aware of as well.
What's one stock that you think really plays to that thematic, this behavioural psychological shift, aside from super retail?
Well, I think you can look at, it's mainly about those that play it in a negative way, what you don't want to own. So from my side, so You know, I'm very wary of office, some of the office names. I know Dexus has been a bit of a market darling. And again, I've owned that name in the past. But I'm just, and they're great assets, but I'm just very, you know, I'm very concerned as to what the usage rates will be of office space. And if business conditions are going to remain tough for a while, there's more supply coming on stream in the next 12 to 18 months. You know, the rentals are going to come under, I think, a fair bit of pressure. Even in the residential space, I mean, people in our office who are getting rental cuts left, right and centre, 10 to 15% off the bat without too much trying. So you can see the ramifications of this as this journey has just begun. So I'm a bit concerned about the ability to continue to drive dividend growth from some of those selective REIT names, same in the shopping centre space. But then if I look at something like a Goodman Group, I have a lot more confidence in that because they're in the industrial market, logistics management, huge beneficiary of online and food and data businesses which have just got long-term growth profiles. So that's a name where I see, you know, kind of flat dividends for this year, but then I see it resuming back to its 5 to 7% normal dividend growth trajectory.
And Don, back to you. So Chris, not a favourite of the REITs, does like Goodman Group though. What are you liking for income?
We probably agree with Chris's views on the REITs as well, actually, and particularly the retail. Again, probably a behavioural change. JB Hi-Fi seems to do very well, and you can actually see those groups that are grasping and doing well in online are actually doing very well. And so if you think about this, COVID is just accelerating a trend that's been happening for the last, you know, 10 years, I suppose, which is everything going online, and this has just, you know, souped it up and made it go at hyperspeed. And so anybody that can crack that online business, and we like JB Hi-Fi in the consumer discretionary area, it seems to be able to be very nimble and very quick, and you know, it's actually benefiting its sales, doing very well at the moment. I think that'll continue.
There you have it. The gents are divided, but together on some. But all in all, look under the hood.
Thanks for listening to Buy, Hold, Sell, brought to you by Livewire Markets, Australia's number one source of expert investment analysis. Register for free at livewiremarkets.com to discover more exclusive investing articles, videos, and podcasts.